Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. They've been accused of giving graduates fake degrees and saddling students with debt they can't pay off. And for-profit colleges took another beating last week when the Obama administration moved to cut them off financially. Now they won't be able to receive government financial aid unless they can prove that most of their students can pay their student loans after graduation. Are for-profit colleges being called out as frauds? Which are and which aren't? With us now, Goldie Blumenstick, senior writer at the Chronicle of Higher Education and author of American Higher Education in Crisis, What Everyone Needs to Know. Goldie, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
For context, and I was surprised to run across some people this weekend who didn't realize this, are private colleges generally not-for-profits? They can seem like big businesses. Here in New York, just look at Columbia and NYU. But almost every private college in America is a not-for-profit institution.
So there's three kinds of colleges. There are the public colleges, state universities like CUNY and SUNY. And then there are private nonprofit colleges like Columbia and NYU. And then there are private for-profit colleges like in the New York City area, Berkeley College, and some of the others that you probably see advertised on the subways a lot, and the big national chains like DeVry and ITT and the like.
What characterizes a for-profit college? Why do some colleges, which from the examples you just gave, make them sound more like technical schools than, you know, institutions of higher liberal arts learning and that kind of thing? What makes a college incorporate itself as a for-profit?
Well, when you're a for-profit college, it means the you know, at the end of the day, the surplus kind of goes back into the pockets of the people who own the company, who own the colleges, or the shareholders. Or nonprofit colleges, the surpluses go back into the entity. Of course, we do see a lot of nonprofit colleges acting in a very business-like way as well. So, but the end of the day is the for-profit colleges have tended to be the ones that offer a more of a career-focused programming, though certainly not all of them. There are for-profit colleges that offer doctoral degrees and master's degrees and BA degrees as well.
Is there a spike in the number of for-profit colleges? Is this why it's starting to get on the government's radar?
The spike has been going downward in the last few years. Oh. I don't know. They don't call that a spike, right? They call that something else, a dip. The colleges had a very big surge of enrollments basically from the mid-2000s all the way till about 2010. They were were growing with the advances of distance education, which a lot of them pioneered, and they were very, let's say, nimble in their advertising and very maybe even aggressive in many cases about recruiting students and recruiting lower-income students who could take advantage of the federal student aid programs. And that they had a surge in their enrollment till about 2010. It's really fallen off sharply since then.
And so this Obama administration crackdown last week on for-profits requires them to show that their students are getting so-called gainful employment after graduation. So this has been a problem? Students are not getting what was advertised at for-profit colleges?
Yeah. By the way, the gainful employment rule that's just went into effect last week, it applies also to nonprofit colleges as well, not just for-profit colleges. Oh. As it happens, more for-profit colleges fail the tests under the gainful employment rule than the nonprofit colleges. And that's because more of the for-profit colleges have programs where the students' debts are too high relative to the earnings that they'll get after they graduate, or relative to their income after they graduate. The programs are expensive and the students take out a lot of debt. And unlike private colleges that we talked about before or public universities, a lot of the for-profit colleges until very recently haven't offered very much in financial aid. So this was all being kind of financed with either out of the students' pockets, Pell grants, federal student grants, or student loans. And it's the student loan part of this that's the focus of the gainful employment rule.
So it's gainful employment relative to their level of student loans.
Right. It's a pretty arcane rule, to be honest. We put together a chart here at the Chronicle one time, and it was almost like kind of one of these really complicated game boards to try to figure out how a college could actually end up having its program be disqualified. It was, you know, pretty difficult to get a program disqualified under this rule. In other words, the rule isn't that tough at the end of the day. But I think the the government has estimated of about 8,000 programs that maybe would be covered by this, probably about 1,400 of them would fail their test. And most of those involve students at for-profit colleges.
Uh-huh. Listeners, any experience with for-profit colleges as a student, maybe as a faculty member? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or with any related question for my guest, Goldie Blumenstick from the Chronicle of Higher Education and author of the book, American Higher Education in Crisis. Market backers will say the incentive is there to do well by their students, so more people want to buy their product. Is the market not working like the Econ 101 textbooks say it does?
It's a very interesting question. The market, the education department's rule, in effect, kind of interrupts this market a little bit because there hasn't really been a check on the market about sort of quality. And this is a very sort of a long, tortured road to creating a check on quality. But up until now, there hasn't been any reason for schools to not charge a lot of money because at the end of the day, they weren't being punished or, you know, challenged on what they were charging. Students would graduate, they would have these high debts, but it wasn't – the college had no consequence to them if the student didn't get a job. The only consequence to them was if the students defaulted on their student loans, it could eventually affect the college's ability to collect financial aid. This is a more direct effort to kind of make the colleges more accountable in that whole market discussion.
Why is the ability to pay back student debt the most important metric in deciding whether an institution should get federal dollars? Because the government seems to have decided that it is.
It's a way to define gainful employment. There's a lot of ways to define gainful employment, and obviously when you think broadly about higher education, the ability to pay back student loans is not the only thing that matters. But if we have a giant default problem in our country, which, you know, we do have for students who don't have, who drop out of school, in which in a lot of cases students at for-profit colleges were dropping out, not completing their programs, for those students, the debt problem is a very big problem. It's a drag on our economy. It's a huge problem for the students because if you have a student loan debt that doesn't go away. You can't buy your house. You can't get a car. There's a lot of things you can't do later on.
One of the largest for-profits, probably the one most people have heard of, the University of Phoenix, which, by the way, that's such a deceptive name because it makes it sound like a public college, right? I mean, there is the University of Arizona, which is a state school. The University of Phoenix makes it sound like it's a city university in the largest city in Arizona. I mean, if you start, Goldie Blumenstick College, everybody's going to know it's private. But if you call it the University of Phoenix, then people are going to maybe think it's one thing and it's really something else. But they announced a lot of changes last week, like establishing admissions requirements. So is this under pressure from these new federal rules? And do you think it's an important reform?
I think it's – by the way, the University of Phoenix name has always been a sort of a thing that stuck in the craw of the people at the Arizona State University, which is located right in Tempe, right next to Phoenix.
Right, and they have a Phoenix downtown campus too, where the journalism school is.
Right. University of Phoenix has been trying to make changes in its program for, I'd say, 4 or 5 years. This is probably the most dramatic of the changes it's made. I mean, it used to have 460,000 students back in 2010, and now it's back down to 206,000, which, by the way, is still huge. But, you know, over the years, University of Phoenix, to some cases, they actually said this on their conference calls with investors. They were really trying to take advantage in the best possible sense and maybe the worst possible sense of student aid money. They used to go to the University of Phoenix years ago, you used to have to be employed, you have to be 23 years old. Over the years, they dropped that employment requirement and they added in, you know, they lowered the age limit and they started recruiting and attracting students who were probably not that well prepared to go to college. And they took them into their programs and they ended up kind of creating a situation where their school was not, they were having higher default rates and having sort of poorer academic results. This admissions requirement is kind of an attempt to kind of go back even further to what they did before. They never used to have sort of an academic admissions requirement. Now they're talking about becoming a much, much smaller by their standards university. And they didn't talk about having the age limit, although they weren't that clear. Maybe they will end up using the age limit as part of the requirements. But they're talking about trying to create some methods to be a little bit more selective in their admissions now.
Dave in Stamford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I went to school out in Santa Barbara, California, for photography at a for-profit college. It got bought out in the 90s by a for-profit institution. And I started out getting a lot of student debt because I had to take out student loans. My parents didn't have much money to help me. And my student debt went from about $60,000 in private and federal, and it's about $80,000 now. Wow. Because I'm not able to make full payments on it because I'm working hourly at a catering business in Connecticut now, and trying to pay rent, trying to pay bills, and it's hard to stay afloat.
Do you regret your choice of school, or do you think that there's anything in your personal experience that suggests a policy change that might be needed?
I think that there needs to be kind of I definitely had great experiences at Brooks out in California, but dropping out early because of my debt, I only took a year of classes there instead of the 3 years that was required to graduate. And I had some good experiences, but really you could get what I experienced in a book or by taking classes at a local community college. And I think that there definitely needs to be some kind of repercussions for these for-profit institutions, because they were firing off great professors that had been there since before it was a for-profit institution, just to make their stock go higher.
Huh.
Before the stock market crash in 2007. So they were kind of laying off really good employees to try and make their stocks scale higher so people wouldn't get angry at the company itself.
Dave, thank you for your call. I appreciate you sharing your experience. You know, I'm thinking about the admission standards, admission requirements being reinstituted at the University of Phoenix as a reform. There's a downside to that, right? Because for-profits generally serve students who are low income, these for-profit colleges. And the industry says it's being unfairly targeted for enrolling high-risk students, such as first-generation students or adult students or low-income students who want access to an education.
It's a very real argument. And, you know, the University of Phoenix always used to pride itself on the fact that it would take any student, take them where they were and get them to a degree. And get them qualified for a degree. I think there were some questions along the way as to whether they were actually doing that effectively with all students. But that was always part of their ethos. And, you know, John Sperling, the guy who founded the University of Phoenix, you know, had that kind of in the back of his mind, that he wanted to make education more accessible to more people.
So your colleague, Kevin Carey, wrote in the Chronicle of Higher Education that for-profits exist in large part to fix educational market failures left by traditional institutions, which is the not-for-profit college sector. And they profit by serving students that public and nonprofit privates too often ignore. So will the shuttering of for-profits under this new crackdown on too much student debt that some of the students incur leave at-risk students with even less educational opportunity?
You know, that's an argument that the Association of Private Sector Colleges and Universities has made. That's the trade group for the for-profit colleges. And they came out with some pretty strong numbers talking about, you know, something like 7 million students would be cut out of opportunities over 10 years. But as your caller just noted, he thought he could have gotten some of those same programs at a community college for a lot less money, probably, you know, maybe not as conveniently all the time or at this, you know, as he had at the other program. But I think there are alternatives out there. So, and to be honest, I don't know that this rule is going to really shut down that many. It's not necessarily going to shut down that many schools or programs. I mean, the government estimates 1,400 programs will be shut down, they predict that now enroll something like 840,000 students. It's a lot of students, but that, I mean, there are other options out there for students to go to as well.
Evan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Evan.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I had a similar experience, what it sounds like the last gentleman that just called did. I went to a for-profit school. My family didn't have a lot of money to contribute to my education. I felt like it was the right decision at the time. About 4 years after when I first started attending this for-profit school, I'm about $80,000 in debt, and I have an associate's degree. And I've been out of the school for 2 years, but the whole experience was a little rattling. I was promised a lot of things that never came through. And then when I tried to pursue anything, I kind of just got left on the line. I found out more and more about the company that owns the school that I went to, General Education Management, I believe was their name. And they just had a lot of conflicts of interest. It was pretty frightening to me how quickly I was just pushed through the system for the school.
Goldie, is this the kind of story that you've heard before?
We hear this story a lot. I'm not saying all colleges do that, but there's a lot of examples of this coming on. Your caller also mentioned a pretty high level of debt. I mean, in many of these cases, the students are also taking on not just federal student loans, but private loans. And so those loans don't even have the same kind of, at least with a federal student loan, if you have a lower paying job, you can pay back your loan with an income-based repayment plan, or with the private loans, you don't have a lot of those options, and it's a harder debt to pay off.
Evan, thanks for sharing that with us. One more, Jim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. I'm an academic. I teach history in one of the four-year CUNY schools. Two things. I find that the appeal of these schools is that they promise very young people that they can get you out fast, that you don't have to so-called waste your time taking history or lit or philosophy, and that they can get you a degree in like 2.5 years as opposed to 4 years or more in a standard traditional college. That's very seductive to a lot of young people who just want to get out there and make money. Secondly, for-profits can be good if, I think, you're already a working person on a certain career path. If you've been in the field for 5 or 10 years and you need a degree to move up in your field, they could be useful for that. But I would absolutely urge a young person just out of high school to stay away from these places that try to seduce you by promising you can get out of school fast and make money, and you don't have to waste your time, so to speak, taking liberal arts.
Right. But is that... is that something that you as a history professor don't like because you think it's going to leave them intellectually not well-rounded? Or in theory, somebody can do, you know, an apprenticeship or vocational training that does leave them qualified to do okay in the work world, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But let me put it this way. If you're, let's say, a personnel official in a company and you have someone who's been, you know, come through a program in 2.5 years with a sort of minimum amount of education, and you're looking at the resume of someone who has a 4-year degree and a broad education, who are you going to hire first?
Hey. Self-answering question. Jim, thank you very much.
But it depends on the field, right? If you're looking to hire somebody who's going to work on your very complicated car, you might want to hire somebody who's been through a very sophisticated car technical program, you know, who knows how to fix your car, who knows how to work all those computers in the car, which none of us understand anymore.
Whether or not they know who Hegel or Rachmaninoff were.
Right. I mean, there certainly is a value for career education in our country. No one's denying. I don't want to deny that. I think it's really important. The question is it affordable, and is it sort of, are people being people being lured to programs properly? You know, are they being lured to things and then being told later on, oh, sorry, this program doesn't qualify for licensure in our state? That's been one of the problems in this sector a little bit.
We're getting such good calls. Let me throw a couple of more people in here briefly. One is Linda in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Yes, thank you. My husband and I went to Manhattan School of Music years ago, and we got our degrees, and we've been making a living for quite a number of years. My granddaughter is going to Pratt for art and loving it and doing something that's actually, she's specializing in something that does have very practical applications and would possibly allow her to make a very decent living.
I think I know where you're going with this, and for time I'm going to try to jump ahead here. Are you asking if the new federal metric for financial aid to colleges is whether you wind up being able to be gainfully employed, is this going to hurt regular nonprofit colleges with arts programs because a lot of people with fine arts degrees have trouble making a living? Is that where you're going with this?
Well, yes, because it would eliminate, it would seem to be actually possibly discriminatory against the arts in general.
Yes, so let me get an answer. Forgive me for being short, but our time is short. So she asks a really good question, Goldie.
It doesn't apply to some of those kinds of programs that, to be honest, how they're going to draw that line of what's a career-focused program is a little bit complicated, and sort of the devil's in the details a little bit on that. But I don't think it's going to apply broadly to arts majors at liberal arts colleges.
I see. Because the
for-profit colleges are arguing, well, see, it's unfair because it doesn't, it only applies to their sector. But it's really aimed at the career-focused programs.
And one more story to tell from Beth in Montclair. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you? Love your show.
Thank you. So you're a school counselor for low-income students?
Yes.
In high schools?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I've had experiences with for-profit colleges that have been very negative, and I've honestly tried to steer my students away from them. I had one for-profit that actually told one of my students that I had recommended that he apply, and I'm the only one, so I know it couldn't have been me. And he, when I asked him, why are you applying to the school? He said, well, they said that you recommended that I apply to the school. Mm. So I called him immediately and said, why are you telling these things to my students? And so they offered to bring food for the faculty to come in. So it's really been, you know, kind of overwhelming.
Beth, thank you very much. All right. A little horror story from a high school guidance counselor. And I guess we will leave it there as the Obama administration takes steps to regulate the for-profit college sector with respect to, I guess, how much debt to gainful employment possibility the students are coming out with, according to new rules issued last week. And we thank Goldie Blumenstick, senior writer at the Chronicle of Higher Education and author of American Higher Education in Crisis, What Everyone Needs to Know. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.